We're talking about getting to know Jesus through the Old Testament, and we have been primarily focusing a lot of attention on the first 17 verses of Matthew's Gospel, the genealogies. And those genealogies are significant because they take us back to the story of the Old Testament and make the connection for us. And so we've been looking at a lot of those kinds of things in terms of understanding the setting and what has come about that really has put the world that Jesus came from, the world that he ministered to and lived in, with all of its laws, with all of the traditions and all of the other things that have been going on, that when Jesus arrived on the scene here on earth as a man, has everything to do with what he did, how he did it, and what he taught, and so forth. So that's what we're really looking at. Last time, 2 weeks ago, we were focusing on, we've been over the last several weeks looking at the different periods of history from Abraham to the kingdom, and then from the kingdom to the exile. Last time we looked at the exile to the Messiah. What was going on in that time period from the end of the exile when the Israelites came back out of captivity to their homeland, and from that particular point all the way to the time that Christ arrives on the scene. And so we were looking at some different events that unfolded during that time period, and we were focusing some on what is referred to as the intertestamental period, okay, or the time between the testament. From the time of the end of the book of Malachi, the end of the Old Testament, to the beginning of Matthew chapter 1 is a period of roughly about 400 years. And there's a lot of different things that were taking place during that time. A lot of history that we talked about in terms of the world and what was going on, things that were taking place that were, in a sense, kind of setting up the conditions for Christ, the Messiah, being able to come, okay? And so we looked at the change, first of all, just by way of real quick review. We looked at some things like in world history during that time period, we had changes of world power that were very significant to what was going to be going on when Jesus comes onto the scene. So after the Assyrian Empire reaches its climax, who do we have that comes on the scene? Okay, well, you have, I think I said Assyrian, the Persian Empire. The end of that particular era, who comes next? Not the Romans, the Greeks. You have Alexander the Greek that comes in, or Alexander the Great that comes in, and he conquers the world, the known world at that time, takes over. When Alexander dies, then his, you know, empire is divided up between his generals, and eventually all of that ends up working out to be the Greek, but it becomes really the Roman Empire. Okay, and so when Jesus comes on the scene physically, okay, he becomes a man, we have the Romans who are the world empire, the world power at that time, which has a lot to do with what's going on in his lifetime. When we look at the religious situation of what's going on, particularly amongst the Jews, okay, we talked last time about some different religious groups that really kind of developed during this intertestamental period, one of the most prominent being the group called the Pharisees, okay? We look at the Pharisees, we see a lot in the Gospels about the Pharisees, don't we? A lot of encounters that Jesus has with this group of religious leaders. You also have the Sadducees, the Essenes, and so forth. But the Pharisees play a very, very prominent role here. And one of the things that we talked about last time was the way that the Pharisees kind of developed from their beginning, which was very noble intentions, to by the time, you know, Jesus comes on the scene, we see them go from a group of people who, again, anybody recall what we said in terms of how do they really kind of get started?
They wanted to separate themselves from the Herodians and be able to adhere to the law more precisely.
Okay. Yeah, they wanted to, you know, this the whole idea was the reason that we've gotten in trouble, our forefathers got in trouble before, was because they violated the laws of God. So if we, you know, what we want to do, we want to keep from getting in trouble again. We want to obey the law. So we're going to try and do everything we can to keep people from violating the law. And basically what they began over this period of time was this kind of succession of, we described as kind of like fences. Remember, you know, that they built a hedge around the law to keep people from getting too close to violating the law. The idea that if you don't cross over the fence, then you won't violate the law. But eventually, over time, then that fence became the new law, you see. And so then they had to build fences out a little bit further. So by the time Jesus came along, much of the law was hardly even recognizable. And they had so many traditions, oral traditions and written traditions, that in many, many ways had superseded the law. And that's where we see so often in the gospel accounts where Jesus has these confrontations, and particularly with the Pharisees, over the traditions and the rules and the regulations and so forth, and where Jesus challenges these religious leaders on their interpretations and their applications of the law, which really had become, more than anything, their traditions and not the laws of God. And so, you know, we see those clashes going on with Jesus and this group of people in particular over those kinds of things. So that's kind of a lot of where we have been over the last couple of weeks. So we want to take a look now and kind of the story of the history, okay, thus far, and the story of the genealogy of Matthew in particular, as we've been focusing on, is really a story that is both from and to. Okay? In other words, it is, first of all, it is a story from which Jesus acquired his identity and his mission. In other words, it's the background for who Jesus was as a man. This is where Jesus came from. All of this history, in other words. That's what helped to shape Jesus' identity and his mission while he was here. Okay? So he comes from that, but it's also a story to which he gave significance and authority. In other words, the Old Testament, okay, is the background that Jesus came from, but it's also the history and the story that Jesus gave legitimacy to by who he was, by his mission and so forth. He gave significance to those stories of the Old Testament and all of the things that had occurred before he came here in again, who he was. Who he is. It is, that is, the story of the Old Testament is the foreground for who Jesus is as the Messiah. And the reason I say is because he still is the Messiah, is he not? You see? And we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of that. In other words, basically, what we need to understand in all of these things that we're looking at is, if it were not for Jesus, then there really would be no need for all of the events that occurred in the Old Testament. Now think about that. Okay? Agree or disagree with that statement? If it were not for Jesus, there'd be no need for the events of the Old Testament.
No, it's the opposite.
Testament's our teacher, and the big lesson there is that you can't do it on your own.
Okay.
You're separated from God, and try as you might, you can't get there on your own steam.
Okay.
And Christ, you know, is the only way, you know, for us to be reconciled to God. So, yeah, with absent him, then why bother?
Okay.
You know.
All right.
We're lost.
And see, the idea here is that we really, I think, in so many ways, have misunderstood the value to us today of the Old Testament and all of those stories and all of the teachings that the Old Testament brings to us. You know, in so many ways, and in particular us, you know, in the brotherhood, we have focused so much of our energy and attention on the New Testament, haven't we? You see? Why? Because the New Testament is the law of Christ today. Right? And that's what we have to learn, and that's what we have to follow, and that's what we're under by law, and so on and so forth. That in so many ways, we've kind of put the Old Testament over on the shelf and go, yeah, it's a lot of great stories. It tells us about God's promises, and we're going to talk more about that in just a moment. But how relevant is it really to us today? And the point is that without all of that, you see, then we really don't completely understand and grasp what God's mission is really all about, right? Exactly, and you're right on track with what we need to look at with this. Let's take it a little bit further here. You know, when we look at the Old Testament, okay, and we study the Old Testament, one of the areas that we generally tend to focus on, it has to do with the promises of God, doesn't it? I mean, we look at God's promises, and we find a lot of hope in those promises. And we kind of tend to look at it, I think, more today, is that we look at all the promises that God made, and we look at all the promises and how he kept those promises, and we say, you know, well, God is a promise keeper, right? And so he promised us salvation, so since he kept all these promises back then we have no reason to believe he won't keep his promise to us today, right? And there's a certain amount of value in that, but if that's all we see in it, then we're missing a major part of what is really there. You see, because what we're looking at here is more than promises. We're looking at history. Okay? It's not just about promises being fulfilled. It is about how God is continuing to work his plan of salvation for all of mankind. You see, God could have fulfilled his desire. You go back to something we talked about basically and fundamentally. What is God's greatest desire that he has? Yeah, it's to reconcile man to himself, right? Okay? Well, what were God's options? You say? What options did he have? Could he not have saved mankind instantaneously just like that? If he wanted to, he certainly could have done that, couldn't he? And then, you know, all of this other stuff wouldn't have had to be done. But what's the problem with doing it that way? Thank you. You eliminate free will. You see? And God doesn't want us to accept him by force. He wants us to choose him. Okay? So therefore, the only other option is to go through this history where God is demonstrating his power and his love in such a way that men will choose him. you see. If it were done instantly, then again, we wouldn't have that choice, okay? But the Old Testament shows us through this history that God has worked to put things in motion so that man will choose to return God's love to him. Okay? And that's the value of the history. The Old Testament then, when we see it that way and understand it that way, it's more than just the fulfillment of the promises that it contains. And certainly the Old Testament, would you agree, has a lot of promises there. Okay? But the Old Testament then becomes more than just the fulfillment of those promises when we see it in the light of the history that is there. It really is God's story, or the story rather, of God's work in human history from which those promises came, and in relation to which they only make sense. In other words, if you take those promises out of the history of what God has been doing, not just with Israel, but with mankind, then those promises don't make a whole lot of sense, do they? I mean, think about it. We've already talked a lot about the promise that God gave to Abraham. Okay, and that promise involved what? I will make you your name great. I will make you the father of many nations. And through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. Well, those are promises, right? Well, if you take those promises away from the history, what sense do they make? But when you go back, and again, we're going to remind ourselves about this again here. You go back and you look at the history from the beginning of time, the Garden of Eden, up until the time of Abraham. Why did God make those promises to him? Why was it necessary? What does the history record?
God made it so that we'll have an opportunity to come back to Him.
Right.
And that's the only way. With all the history out there, we had to have some way to come back.
Right.
And He laid the foundation. Certainly, all these many, many hundreds of years, thousands of years, 1600 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All of these, and one of the you talked about the history of the king or whatever it was. I like Daniel because when Nebuchadnezzar had that dream, Daniel went to him and told him, "Well, look, you were the gold, and there's going to be the silver, and there's going to be the bronze." See, all of this
comes from
this.
Place. But if you don't go back and if you don't understand the history of why God made the promises that He did, okay, go back to the first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis and what are the stories that are there? What's the history tell us? What are they about? Right, but right, He didn't break His promises, but what were those promises all kind of predicated on? What were they all about? What was the condition of man by the time that God called Abraham?
Continually evil all the time.
It was steeped in sin. He was lost, you see, as not just as individuals, but mankind was lost, you see. And that's why, that's the basis of the promise that God gave to Abraham. Remember, the nation of Israel did not exist when God called Abraham. Okay? So God wasn't calling Abraham and made a promise to save Israel. He was calling Abraham and making a promise to save the world, mankind, all nations, you see. And so, but if you don't look at the history and all you do is look at the promise, then you can miss that, you see. And we get hung up on some things that, you know, are really significant in all this. Brian and then Judy over here. Has God's mission changed since it started? No, it hasn't changed a bit, has it? You see? Judy?
Well, I was just going to mention that really we are introduced to Christ already in Genesis.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. But I think a lot of people that don't really study the Old Testament really don't, or at least I did, really comprehend what Jesus was. You know, yeah, he was born and a virgin and all of this, but until I really dug into the Old Testament, I really began to understand, you know, he was already and he will always be. You know, it puts a whole different perspective on the way you study about Christ.
Right.
And you begin to understand his mission and his desire and his passion.
Right.
A whole lot better if you go back to there. And
absolutely.
It's like you say, it's this history from the beginning that helps you to understand the New Testament a whole lot better.
Absolutely, because when we read the Old Testament, what do we tend to look at the Old Testament as? It's old news, it's the old law, and it particularly has to do with
Israel.
And we look at the New Testament and we say it's the new law. And it has to do with Christians. And neither one of those could be further from the truth. You see? The reality is the Old Testament as well as the New Testament have less to do with just who Israel is and who Christians are as to who what God is trying to do to redeem all of mankind. That's what the story of the Bible is all about, you see? And that's how we really need to be looking at it. You see, if we just look at the Old Testament as promises that have been fulfilled, then its content, and I think this is what's happened to us, its content has very little value to us today. We tend to look at it as the old stories. You see, aren't those really great? We read all those old stories of what God did and how he promised this and he fulfilled the promise. And yeah, those are great stories, and we tell the kids, we teach them all those stories and everything, but we're missing a tremendous amount of what the story is all about. Because we're looking at it as, that's already finished work. That's done. And it doesn't really have a lot to do with us today other than the value of those old stories and give us examples of how God can still work today. And we're missing a major, major part of it. If we see the Old Testament really as the story of God's work of reconciliation for all men, you see, then we see hope for ourselves, even in those stories of the Old Testament. And we see it as that plan then that God had, that he announced in the Garden of Eden, that plan is still, and this is the most important part, it's still unfolding today. it's not then an old story versus a new story. You see? It is the story of God's redemptive work of mankind. Okay? So that's, you know, when we look at this story and how it kind of sets us up for Jesus and getting to know Jesus, we need to see it more in that broader context than, again, what we typically do as the Old Testament was for the Israelites, the New Testament is for Christians, and that's really what it's all about. You understand that, you got the basics, and you're fine. You say, well, if that's all we're doing, and I'm afraid that's what we have been doing for so long, then we're missing. We're missing so much of the story. Gene? Okay. All right. It is fulfilling it, but there's still so much more. Okay, yeah. The Apostle Paul even tells us that the Old Testament is a what? A teacher or a schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, right? Okay. But again, we have to be careful because oftentimes, even now, do we not tend sometimes to look at the New Testament as the stories that happened 2,000 years ago? And simply as, what can we learn from those stories and from the examples and so forth that make our lives a little bit better? Again, we lose sight of the universal redemptive work that God has going on. Say, and I think that's one reason why we tend not to be as evangelistic as we need to be, because we kind of tend, I think, to look at the story as being one that has been fulfilled from the standpoint of going, yes, you know, Christ came, He died, He rose again, and all those who accept Him can have a chance of salvation, and that's us. Say. If we lose sight of this story being a continuous story that is still unfolding, it is God's redemptive work that is still ongoing, say, amongst mankind, then I think the whole concept of evangelism and outreach become more significant to us in that. Steve?
Well, you know, the Word of God is living and active, and you're right. Sometimes, and I know as a kid, I kind of felt that way. You know, the New Testament with these old stories, and that's good. It tells us what we're supposed to do. The subtle danger there is that you get to where you can start to treat it as law. You know, here's the rules that were laid down, and I've got to follow them. And we lose the whole living dynamic of Christ as our continuous Savior. You know, you lose the part about the blood of Christ continually cleansing. And that makes you really miserable.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most miserable Christian there is the one that thinks, yeah, Christ's blood was shed, and I've got to do it right, you know, to be covered by that blood.
Right.
Because you ain't going to do it right. Try as you might.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? You're never going to, you know, be that good or good enough or, right. You know.
The other problem that it ends up bringing us to is we end up with the same kind of circumstances that the Israelites ended up with, where we begin to look at ourselves as God's exclusive people, and we have it, and we're the only ones. See? And then, if you want it, then you got to come see us about it. You see, there is, in this next section that I want to begin, I don't know if we'll get through all of this part this morning, but we need to look at the uniqueness of this story. Okay? It is a unique story. And there's really two parts of this. First of all, we need to understand the concept of a universal goal. Okay? And we've kind of talked about this and touched on it several different times, but it's, you know, let's place it in the context of today and you know, people, theologians and people, how they look at religion today, okay, and how all of the stuff of the past plays into that. In other words, there are those who would see the story of Israel, okay, all of that, you know, Old Testament stuff, they would see the story of Israel as enjoying a unique history of salvation over and against the rest of the world that, in a sense, kind of got shortchanged on the whole deal. So, in other words, people even today tend to look at, well, you know, Israel, they got the best of the deal here. And where we look at God and say, well, yeah, God is the God of the universe, but the Israelites, they got it better than everybody else. And the rest of the world got shortchanged because God loved Israel so much better and so forth. They would say that if we believe in one universal God, then the histories of the various nations must be considered as valid preparations for Jesus' saving work on earth. In other words, you've got to look at everybody and what's going on with everybody in their histories equally as a part of Israel's history. Well, in other words, the Judeo-Christian heritage, according to these kinds of thinkers today, is, quote-unquote, one way to the truth. But we should look within worldwide history for other routes to the knowledge of the gospel of Jesus. We've got to focus on what they're doing. In other words, what that does is it brings in and adds a significance that God never added to all of these other world religions that are out there. And it gives weight, according to many people, to the we're just one road of many roads on the way to get to heaven. And if you think about it, that kind of thinking is one of the things that has allowed for, I'll just put it that way, much of the disdain that we are seeing in the world today toward the nation of Israel. If you look at all the stuff that's going on in the Middle East and the attitude that people around the world have toward Israel today, much of it has its roots in this idea that Israel has been a privileged nation, you say, and the rest of us have gotten shortchanged, and it's time for Israel to get their dues. You say? And that's the attitude that many people have towards that, and that kind of attitude comes at least in part from this great misunderstanding of the history of the nation of Israel. A lot of people see Jesus in the context of world religions. They cut Jesus off from its historical and scriptural roots, from his historical and scriptural roots, and they see Jesus simply as the founder of a new religion. Okay? Now, what's wrong with that picture? You see, in other words, there it's very prominent today that people see Jesus as, you know, he came out of Judaism, yes, but he started this new faith, this new religion called Christianity, and the two have broken their ways and gone their separate ways. But Jesus started this new religion. What's wrong with that picture? Why is it not acceptable?
If he was able to break away from God, why can't I, why can't somebody else do it?
Okay. Okay. Not only that, but it also does something more significant.
Well, it doesn't identify as God.
Okay. Yeah, he's just a man that founded a new religion and so on and so forth. What else does it do?
Anybody is okay. Some other guy just as good as he is.
Exactly. Somebody else comes along, they start a new religion, and they've got a lot of great points and everything. People follow them. Why is this not just as valid a way as this way? But more significantly, Sydney? Yes. What it does is it shows that God failed. You see? And it basically invalidates the whole plan of salvation for all of mankind. And it says that God kind of hovered around the Israelites and treated them as special, but that didn't work out, you see. And so then Jesus kind of went off and started this new plan with these Christians, you see, because the first plan didn't work. And you lose the connection from the old to the new in all the things that we've been talking about, you see. Namely, primarily, God's universal plan of salvation for all men. Christianity was not an afterthought, you see, because the Jews rejected Jesus, which is what many people teach today. Why did he go and start this new religion? Because the Jews rejected him. No. No, that's not why, you see. That's not why at all. But if you only look at the two groups and the two histories in as separate, then it's really easy to come to that kind of a conclusion. And more importantly, if you only look at the Old Testament as being about the nation of Israel, then it is very easy to fall into that kind of thinking that God, that everything was all about the Israelites. You see, when it was not, it was never all about the Israelites. It has always been about all men. A universal goal that God had of redeeming mankind.
But in essence for us, that was the perspective of the majority of the Jews toward Jesus.
Absolutely.
In fact, some of them referred to him, just leave him alone and he'll disappear like the mothers have just
exactly.
Before him.
Exactly, yeah.
And he'll, everything will be okay.
Which tells us what?
Well,
they didn't understand what their history was all about. They didn't understand the universal plan of God. They, and that's what I was saying earlier, if we're not careful, we can become very much like the Israelites and lose sight of the universal plan that God has for mankind and set ourselves up as the exclusive privileged class of God today, much like the Israelites were in the Old Testament time. You see, we have to be careful of that.
It's interesting, too, to note that the woman at the well, the Samaritan, her statement was, well, yeah, okay, the Messiah's going to come and explain it all.
Mm-hmm.
And what a powerful statement, that just the accepting, where it was like Jerry said, the high-octane religious leaders back there in Jerusalem were like, this guy's a flash in the pan.
Right. Yeah. They missed it. Brian?
That was my whole plan from the very beginning. He gave up on the Jews. There would be no hope for me because there would be a point of time that God would say, I'm done.
Right.
So if it wasn't the plan from the beginning to save the world, it would be wrong.
Right. Exactly. The uniqueness of Israel in the Old Testament, clearly, we've got to understand this point. It clearly is intended to show God's dealing with Israel for the sake of all humanity. You've got to be able to see it in that way. If we don't, then we're missing a major part of the picture. Was Israel a unique nation amongst all the nations of the world? Absolutely. But their uniqueness was not in and of itself for them only. Their uniqueness was the plan to bring about salvation to all men. Okay? And next week we're going to look at a couple of other texts that will help us to really focus more intently on some of the things that God through the prophets had to say about that plan as it unfolds and Israel's role in that. So we need to think about it in terms of God's plan and displayed by His promise to Abraham that all nations would be blessed. His plan was for all men to have the opportunity to be saved. That plan was carried out in part through the uniqueness of Israel as a nation, but never intended to be just for them. Ted, you had a comment. You want to close us out?
It's amazing to me just how significant that God's plan is in the world. I mean, you can imagine God said it how it would be, but the world can't seem to see it. Mm-mm. Yet Israel, down through history, according to the world, and as we look at it and read about it, was really insignificant as an empire,
right,
as a power, or anything we look at.
Right.
And yet, the influence that the Jews have had down through history,
right,
good and bad, but yet, and still is.
Yeah.
I mean, over there in Palestine, Jerusalem, mm-hmm, in that area, is the focus is still there.
Yeah.
And not because they are a world power, not because they have oil, not because they have anything the world wants. So what's it all about? There's a plan of God involved, yeah, in all this.
And that plan is still working today.
Yeah. Exactly. God is not willing to finish it there.
Okay, we're out of time this morning. I wish we could keep on going, but we'll pick it up here next week. Thank you all very much.